Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast.
All right, before we get started with this week's show, a quick word from a sponsor that is helping me bring you this specific episode of Backseat Rider. Not sure about all of you, but one of the most frustrating things for me about this whole topic of climate change is not knowing who or what to believe, and also just not feeling like I'm ever left with many practical steps on how I can be a part of the solution. But there is a new book coming out I want to give you a heads up on. You can pre-order it. It's by Michael Bloomberg and Carl Pope, and it is called Climate of Hope. Now, I haven't gotten my hands on a copy yet, but I'm told that one of the things this book doesn't do is talk about climate change in these apocalypse-like terms. Climate of Hope creates a roadmap to tackle climate change, focusing on how cities, businesses, and regular citizens have the power to make an impact. Michael Bloomberg is the former mayor of New York City. Carl Pope is a lifelong environmental leader, and despite differing perspectives on this issue, these two have reached similar conclusions about climate action, again, offering practical solutions to create concrete benefits. Again, the book is called Climate of Hope, and you can pre-order a copy at climateofhope.com.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
Is it just me, or is there a day for everything now? I know we just had National Siblings Day. Everyone was posting pictures with them and their, you know, old school pictures of them and their brothers and sisters. You know, but there's like National Coffee Day, National Popcorn Day. And there's actually a website that keeps track of all these so-called holidays. And I looked up what today is on the day that I'm scripting this episode. Today, not lying here, today is National Take a Chance Day. It's National Talk Like Shakespeare Day. And it is also National Cherry Cheesecake Day, which is not to be confused with National Blueberry Cheesecake Day, which is coming up later this month. And I'm not lying here. National Blueberry Cheesecake Day is coming up later this month. So I'm sure most of these days are just brain products or brain children, I guess would be the phrase, of some industry association and that kind of thing. But I got this email from a listener a couple weeks ago, a woman named Jessica, who wrote about this holiday that's sometimes overlooked, but it's actually very important. And Jessica wrote, "In honor of Teacher Appreciation Week, the first week of May, tell about a memorable teacher. What made this teacher so memorable?" Sure enough, Teacher Appreciation Week, it's this week. It leads up to National Teacher Day. And I thought to myself, all right, unlike all those other BS holidays, this one deserves as much recognition as possible. So this week, out on the roads for Teacher Appreciation Week, my Lyft riders faced down Jessica's question. Tell me about a memorable teacher and tell me what made this teacher so memorable.
To this day, I mean, I just think back on how well she helped us to process everything. And I actually ended up becoming a licensed clinical social worker.
She always, like, went the extra mile. She didn't just teach the class.
And she was just a badass. Like no fucks given ever.
He was a really strict teacher, but also, like, probably the most creative teacher I've ever had.
I have not seen her since I graduated from law school in 91, but I had thought about her and reflected on her, and I was thinking about her recently.
My passengers talked about some truly inspiring people. I can't wait for you to hear their stories, but keep in mind, memorable can encompass a lot.
So he was asked to leave the school district, obviously.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Backseat Rider, where I drive Lyft, and whoever ends up in the backseat of my car becomes the cast of this show. And we start this week with a social worker that I picked up one morning at her apartment in Edgewater, right near the lakefront. And 90% of this conversation happened on Lakeshore Drive, southbound.
To be honest with you, I would have to say that it was probably my first grade teacher.
Okay.
And it's a weird story. It's not a typical, you know, she really spoke to me in learning math or something like that. It's when I was in first grade, one of my best friends at the time, unfortunately, was hit by a school bus and was killed.
It was a little girl named Catherine. And she died in this freak accident that happened on the south side of Chicago in the Hyde Park neighborhood. And here's what happened. According to my writer, middle of the school year during winter, and their bus driver was dropping off a group of kids in the neighborhood right after school.
It was a school bus driver who had been there forever. Everybody knew her. You know, she was a great lady. And kids just piled off the bus, and I'm sure she was yelling at someone to sit down. She pulled the doors closed, and she didn't realize that a couple of kids had crossed, like, almost directly in front of the bus out of her line of sight. And Catherine slipped on a very small patch of ice and just fell down, and the bus just moved forward, and there was nothing anyone could do to stop it.
Traumatic event, and again, because it was in the winter, that meant it happened right in the middle of the school year, so no time to process it.
So this teacher went from just being a teacher to being basically a counselor for all of these students for the rest of the school year as we figured out how to deal with the loss of this fellow student. And to this day, I think I just remember her calmness and her kindness and her incredible ability to sort of speak to a number of different students on different levels who are in different stages of grief or even just understanding. I mean, when you're seven, you know, it's hard to understand what it means when someone's not going to be there anymore. And she was just amazing at that and still managed with all of that to, I think, give us, I don't know, the most, I wouldn't say calm, but the most normal school year we could possibly have. The whole time, I mean, no matter what happened, if you were angry about it, if you were sad about it, if you were just kind of numb about it, she just kind of rolled with it and sort of, I think, altered her attitude and her way of speaking to you with whatever you were going through. And I just sort of remember after that just wanting to, like, I really kind of was drawn to her in terms of, you know, feeling that she was a comfortable person to be around even if she wasn't saying anything. Like, her presence was just comfortable to me.
What qualities do you feel like you took away, or lessons that you took away from that first grade teacher?
I'm not always the calmest person, for sure. A little bit fiery at times, but I always think about how no matter what you said to her, no matter what she was talking to you about, there was always this incredible, like, tone of acceptance in her voice. Even if she was talking to you about a bad grade or because you got in trouble because you were yakking with somebody during class, you know, it was never punitive and it was never judgmental and it was never mean. She was always just, you know, kind of factual and calm about it and, you know, here's how we make sure this doesn't happen again kind of thing. And I appreciated that about her because, you know, as you go through life, you don't always experience that. And just her aura, I mean, seriously, one of the calmest women I've ever met in my life. And I sort of strive for that, especially in social service. I think it's a necessary part of being a social worker.
In fact, she actually credits that first grade teacher with being a major influence in her own decision to become a social worker.
But yeah, she was a great, great teacher. Loved her.
And that was a common thread in a lot of these conversations. Childhood teachers that former students say had this very real, very direct impact on what they're doing and even how they're behaving as adults. Like this next passenger, she used to absolutely hate reading. As a fifth grader, she dreaded it so much she could never get through the assignments.
I had a really big issue with reading comprehension. I just, like, couldn't understand it. I couldn't focus myself long enough to do it. And I would pretend I read them and I hadn't actually read them. And we had to get them, you know, when we answer questions, we had to get them signed by our parents saying, I answered these and the teacher graded them. And I didn't do well on them. So I don't remember exactly, but I used to, I think, lie to my mom about it or lie to my teacher. And basically one or the other, they found out. And my parents got so upset because, you know, their kid lied about their grades and they're like, why is my kid lying? And my teacher.
Now, when it came to asking for help, at the time, she didn't think her teacher was the most approachable.
His name was Mr. Farmer. He was this tall, big dude, glasses, big beard, and had this reputation in my elementary school of being, like, absolutely terrifying.
But listen to how Mr. Farmer handled it when the issue came to a head.
You know, being 10 and, like, kind of like a shrimpy, you know, brown kid in the school district, he came to me and he was like, all right, like, what's tripping you up? Like, how can I help? And I was like, I don't get it. Like, I don't get reading comprehension. Like, I feel like I'm reading it and I get it. And then you ask me 10 minutes later and I just can't get it. And he was like, all right, I'm going to challenge you with he challenged me with just reading books. And he was like, just see how many you can get through. You don't have to race about it. You don't have to whatever, but just log them. And then he decided to start doing it for the whole class. And we logged how many books we would read. And he was just wonderful about it. He would, like, talk to me about the books to make sure I was understanding it. He, like, came and, like, took my mom's, like, work phone number so he could call her and, like, talk to her about how he could help my reading comprehension. And, like, it was, like, from that level where, like, I actually started to enjoy reading and enjoy books. And, like, also how I, like, learned to talk to my parents about, like, I don't understand this and I'm not doing well on it. And I'm not like my brother is, like, I need a little extra help here. So he was the best. And I think, like, kind of fostering that love of reading really young helped as we got older. Because reading, you know, especially for school when you have to do it, didn't feel like a chore anymore. I was like, oh, thank God I get to read. And now being an adult and, like, staring at a computer screen 60 hours a week for work, it's such a pleasure when I get to, like, step back and, like, grab a book and, like, sit and read. And it's just lovely. And I attribute so much of that to him.
She now works as an advertising and technology consultant and says books are her escape.
I pretty much make sure I always have a book in my bag, or I'm usually reading 3 books at once. So I'll have, like, a book by my bed, a book in my bag, and then something on, like, my iPad or my Kindle or whatever. So it's like, well, if I don't have space for a book, I've got this and I can still keep reading.
Sunny, late morning, picked up a guy and a girl in Andersonville, and they worked together. I couldn't tell if they were a couple, but they were headed downtown to see Hamilton. And they both work as UX designers. UX is short for user experience. So if you're on an app or a website, they're the ones who decide how you interact with it. The woman says she absolutely loves what she does, and she traces that love back to middle school.
So I grew up in San Francisco. And we had this kind of, like, hippy-dippy computer teacher.
His computer teacher's name was Mrs. Cook.
And normally computer class is, like, learning, you know, Mavis Beacon teaches typing and Oregon Trail, and that's all you do. But for whatever reason, this was, like, in 1999, she had the foresight to teach a bunch of, like, seventh graders to code in HTML. And we didn't understand what we were doing. But it was amazing. And she was just, like, I don't know, she just, like, knew what was up.
She predicted the future.
She changed my life. That's what I'm doing now.
Wow.
So. And she says it was the way that Mrs. Cook introduced HTML that was unique.
She didn't treat it like a big deal. Like, if you told, like, high school students or college students at that time that they were going to learn programming, like, it makes it sound hard, like, that it would be a daunting challenge to learn. But she was just so, it was just like any other assignment in class.
And in doing that assignment, which basically meant creating kind of a rudimentary website, she remembers when everything clicked.
Like, you start with this thing, you just have no idea what you're typing. And then you get to a point where you can, like, create and change things. And, you know, when you choose a color, it comes out this way. Or you have, like, a creative idea and it can come out this way. And you suddenly have, like, a new, like, toolkit or a new, like, the same way artists feel about, like, paint, for example, when you start suddenly understanding, like, how to control the paint. Yeah, that was amazing.
Her coworker, or the guy who could be her boyfriend who was sitting next to her in the back seat, also brought up a teacher whose methods were memorable and also had that effect of just clicking for him.
Mine's definitely not as impactful as your example. It's not that. I don't know if it's as, like, grand or had this, like, evolutionary effect on my life. But I remember Mr. Johnson, who was my second grade teacher in Georgia, and I don't know, I had to think really hard while you were talking about why he was my favorite teacher, but it was, like, the first time that I remember going to school, and he had this way of he was a really strict teacher, but also, like, probably the most creative teacher I've ever had, where you could see, like, looking back, I can kind of see the amount of effort that he put into making the lessons, like, creative. So I remember one time when we were learning about percentages and fractions in his class, I remember him, I'm kind of putting the pieces together, like, over the years after that class, but I remember before the class, he, like, pulled these two girls aside and talked to them in the hallway, and basically what the conversation was in the hallway, now that I look back on it, was like, hey, I'm going to pull this prank on you, where I get mad at you for, like, ordering a pizza to the class, and then I'm going to pretend I have this pizza, and then I'm going to use a pizza to teach the kids about fractions. And so he came into the classroom, and he had this really boring, generic, like, cardboard pizza that all the other teachers were just used to, like, show fractions, and he was holding it like it was this hot pizza that these girls had ordered. And he's like, okay, class, here's what happened. Sarah and Julie thought it'd be funny to call the pizza place and order this pizza, and now we have this pizza, and so we have to learn about fractions, or, like, I need to teach you about, like, you know, how these slices break down into percentages or whatever. And he, like, had this whole skit and, like, you know, invested all this time into, like, making it feel like it was this important thing that we were doing in second grade. And I think that's, like, as, like, you know, understanding the challenges of being a teacher for these second graders every day who really don't know why they're there or why they're learning this stuff. Like, looking back on it in retrospect, I really respect, like, how much attention he put on it. And so I think it really made me personally feel like, since he cared about it so much, like, it must be worth doing.
That lesson has stuck with him. And so did another one from that same second grade teacher, Mr. Johnson.
Like, we had an assignment to build a log cabin, which, like, looking back, that was, like, my dream project. Like, I went on to major in architecture, so, like, that was fine.
There you go.
Like, I didn't put it together then, but, like, that was, like, the best thing. I remember working on that project, like, my grandma was in town, and we were putting together this log cabin and, like, gathering sticks outside and, like aging and detailing it and weathering it with, like, moss you know, like, aging the cabin so it looked like it had been used and, like, had, like, dirt tracks and everything.
How big was the cabin?
It was small. It was, like, a little scale model.
But everybody made them?
Everyone made them. So, like, some people made it out of pretzels, like, pretzel sticks, and it was, like, really complicated and, like you know, almost, like, uniform and clean. And mine was, like, aged and had moss and, like, was real sticks and everything. And then I remember him, he picked out two of them, like, me and this girl who had made it out, like, this really pristine version out of these big pretzel sticks. And he brought it down to the teacher next door, and he said, like, look at these, look how cool they are. And I remember that was, like, the first time I was like, whoa, I can impress my teachers by something that I really care about. And so
I can be good at
Yeah. Like, people care if I do a really good job. Like, how can I push this further to, like, have this effect again? Because it felt pretty cool. There was definitely a connection between this is something I already like doing and it seems like other people care about it too, which I think is really valuable, like, for a kid, like, you know, to make connections between the things that you personally find yourself caring about and then seeing, like, that, like, justified in the outside world, like, someone else also caring equally about it, is really important when you're young and you're trying to find, like, how you're going to fit into the world.
I was on the near south side, and I picked up another tech person, software engineer. This woman's 28 years old.
I don't think I would have, like, become a software engineer if my teachers didn't think I was smart enough.
And she had a unique backstory. Her parents moved to Alabama from India, and she spent most of her childhood, went to high school in Mobile before heading off to college in Kansas. And when I posed a question to her, she chose her high school art teacher.
She is this very thin woman with stringy brown hair that was bobbed. And she was probably in her late 50s, maybe early 60s. And she had, like, this very raspy voice because she smoked all the time. And so she would go out for smoke breaks and have a cup of coffee in her hand all the time. And even though her name was Anne Fredella, we called her Fred. And she was just a badass, like no fucks given ever. Oh, sorry, can I cuss?
You can swear.
Awesome. So she was just, and this was in Alabama. So, you know, to have, like, that kind of female just being a badass was kind of awesome. And, you know, and, like, I don't know, you know, Alabama can be kind of
constricting and traditional and conservative. So that was really cool. Just being who she was like inspiring. And then
when you say badass, why do you describe her as a badass?
In like unapologetically who she was is like how she is. Just very unapologetic, no regrets in life, no shame for who she is or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? It was just, you don't meet a lot of people who are like that, who are so truly comfortable with who they are.
So while we've heard from a number of passengers who credit their teachers with leading them in some way to their current careers, this woman credits Fred with really influencing her personality.
I try to be like very self-assured in who I am and unapologetic as well. Just because like there's, you know, different things that you grow up being insecure about, and there's those things that definitely you can't change, and then you accept them, and then you're like, yeah, this is probably what makes me great.
A cool thing about pursuing this question was it wasn't just K through 12 teachers that people told me about.
And actually one of my law professors is unfortunately dying, and I just found out about it. So I sent her this really neat note to tell her 40 years ago how inspiring she was to me.
I'd put this woman in her 60s, and she's a former New York assistant district attorney who now teaches law herself. And the law professor she's talking about, a woman named Carolyn Ellis, stood out for a number of different reasons.
She was a Lebanese American who grew up in Mississippi, and I was in law school in Mississippi. And she was this brilliant mix of, this was in early 90s, brilliant mix of intelligence, wit, and just character, just strong character. At a time when women law professors, I think she was one of three. And
at this whole school?
At the whole school. And being who she was, Lebanese American.
In Mississippi.
In Mississippi. She actually, like me, had grown up in Mississippi. I was one of less than 10 black students in the whole law school.
Wow.
But I just admired that she had the ability to be who she was as a woman. And who she was as an intellectual, but in such an unassuming way. And so she showed strength and grace under pressure without having to do so. She just exhibited it.
She says that Professor Ellis helped her navigate what she described as a male-dominated environment.
And so when I was in my last year in law school in Mississippi, and I had an opportunity to go to the DA's office in New York, the state prosecutor's office. And I asked the male teacher who was over the externship program, could I do that? He said, why in the hell would anybody want to go to New York? You know. And then he proceeded to tell me, when you're done there, nobody's going to hire you here. I was like, oh, my God. I remember talking to her about it. I was like, but you did it. You grew up in Mississippi. You went to Yale, and you did this, and then you came back, and you're this law professor. So she was like, go! Forget them! Do what you want! You know, that kind of thing. You set your own destiny. She was just that kind of an encouraging spirit.
If it wasn't for Professor Ellis, she says she might not have had the courage to go all the way up to New York, where she eventually got hired full-time and met her husband.
And so that's what I wrote her husband. I said, gosh, almost 40 years, and I just remember her strength, her character, her integrity, and her silent battles with that male-dominated environment.
All right, going back to my original question for this episode, what made the teacher so memorable? Let's not forget that there is a flip side to being memorable.
He kind of shut every student out that he ever had. Never contacted any of us, never communicated with us ever again. So it's kind of awkward to see him.
And we'll hear about why her former teacher got fired in just a minute. But first, if you are liking this show, if you're liking Backseat Rider, some sponsors to tell you about that are helping make it possible for me to bring you the show for free each week. One of them is Blue Apron, which has been a big hit at my house recently. I've been bragging nonstop about these Fontina stuffed pork chops that I served the other night to my mom and my wife.
The sauce is the best.
And I made that sauce from scratch with Blue Apron. So whether you're a beginner like me or experienced, Blue Apron is great because they deliver you the recipes and all the fresh ingredients you need to make those recipes. They deliver it right to your door. And we're talking exact amounts too, so nothing goes to waste, which feels good. And on the menu this week, beef teriyaki stir fry, baked spinach and egg flatbread, crispy salmon and roasted potato salad. All sounds great. And you, as a Backseat Rider listener, you can try Blue Apron and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/backseat. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Again, that's blueapron.com/backseat. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Parrish from the Retronauts Podcast, a show about classic video games. We're exploring gaming's history every week. We talk about classic video games and how the medium's past feeds into the industry and culture of today. Want to know more about the people who made Destiny? What's the story behind Mario? And yes, we even explain why they call it Final Fantasy when there's 15 of the things. From arcade classics to the latest retro releases, Retronauts covers it all. Subscribe to us on iTunes or right here on the Podcast One Network. Listening to Retronauts won't help you build your gamer score, but you'll rock at bar trivia.
All right, spring. It's in full swing now. And if you're looking to buy a car, if you got one picked out, perhaps for the summer months here, I would strongly advise using TrueCar, which is the service that lets you see what other people in your market pay for the same car that you want. I used it when I bought my most recent car. It made the experience at the dealership a lot better. Not only was it faster, it was way less stressful. And that is because through TrueCar, my wife and I, we were confident we were getting the car for a fair price because we knew we were right in the ballpark. We had context. That was the whole reason. A lot of people are catching on to this as well. 3 million cars have now been sold using TrueCar, and that includes 700,000 pre-owned vehicles. So you can use it to buy new or used. It's saving people, on average, $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Picked up a guy and a girl. Again, didn't know their relationship status. We weren't in the car very long together, but both of them looked to be in their mid-20s. And the guy told me about his track coach. Had some great things to say about him, but it was the woman's story that really stuck with me. She brought up this guy from her hometown high school, and he taught some intro business classes and was also the advisor for an extracurricular club.
He became one of my best friends. And lives in my hometown still, and I like see him at like the local hardware store every once in a while, but he was probably the only one that I wanted to keep in touch with ever, the only other teacher I ever connected with. I remember skipping school once to work on a project with him, and I just sat in his classroom the entire day working on a project, but I was technically sick, so that he's probably the
really
which so and it's were... and it's kind of sad because I had such a great relationship with him, and then he ended up having some personal decisions affect his career.
What happened?
He slept with a former student.
Ooh.
And they had a child together. So he was asked to leave the school district, obviously. And he kind of shut every student out that he ever had. Never contacted any of us, never communicated with us ever again. So it's kind of awkward to see him. But it's kind of a shame that that was a side of him that none of us knew about. A lot of kids knew him, so there's no doubt that they met while she was in school.
Yeah.
So what I don't understand is the kid was born 3 or 4 years after she graduated, so it's kind of like, did they maintain that relationship the entire time, or was it something that happened after the fact? Yeah, I mean, it was his own mistake that he decided to make, and I don't judge him for it, because now he, like, has sole custody of this kid, and she's the cutest thing ever, and he's happy now, so I don't judge him for it. It all worked out. But it was weird just because none of us saw it, none of us thought of him in that way. And then it was sad that we all had such a great relationship with him, and he was one of the favorites in the school, and then he just up and disappeared and didn't say anything to anyone.
And you never got a creepy vibe from him?
No, never. He was always very related to the kids, super fun to be around, always cracking jokes. Everyone wanted to hang out with him and go on all these trips for this organization with him, and he was great. None of us ever felt he was creepy in that way.
And if you're curious how she's aware of some of the more current details of this guy's life, it's because she still follows him on Twitter.
I can't maintain that awesome relationship that I had, which sucked.
Yeah.
But I guess the lesson is don't sleep with former students that get you fired from your job.
Now, to clarify about that interview, especially for newer listeners of Backseat Rider, I will include the most memorable interviews I get on a certain topic, regardless of whether they fit neatly into what I think that people are going to say on a topic, like National Teacher Day, which is supposed to be all positive. And I feel like it's a lot more real this way, and I'm not just going to hold back an answer like hers just because it's kind of an outlier. And I also think her story is just as good of an indicator of just how influential our teachers are. When they do something great, or if they make a mistake, it's really felt by a lot of people.
These stories that we're talking about, where like now we're looking back and realizing that teachers had such a formative influence on us, there's no way that those teachers actually see those necessarily, because it takes so long for the experiences to like manifest and show up in your life. And now I obviously appreciate that teacher that we were just talking about, but I have no idea where she is. Like, she could be anywhere, she could be doing anything. And I know, I'm sure they go into teaching because they want to make that impact on people's lives, but they never get to see the results. So I wish there were some way that we could go back and like tell them somehow.
Those are my sentiments exactly. So with that said, and apologies in advance for calling out anyone who doesn't want to be called out on a podcast, too bad. Ann Fredella, aka Fred, the art teacher from Mobile, Alabama.
You know, I wasn't intellectual enough to like understand that's why I liked her back then. But yeah, I was like, wow, this woman is awesome. Why is she awesome? And then as I got older, I realized, oh, that's why.
To Mr. Johnson, the second grade teacher who taught fractions using scorching hot cardboard pizza down in the state of Georgia.
Like, looking back, it was so clear that he was someone who thought about what he was going to do, you know, outside of class, and put a lot of effort into it. Like,
to Mrs. Cook, who bravely taught HTML to seventh grade students in San Francisco.
Now, what would you say to Mrs. Cook in San Francisco?
I don't know how she thought that it was a smart or easy undertaking to teach a bunch of 12-year-olds how to code, but I am so thankful.
To Mr. Farmer, that terrifying bearded man who also instilled a love for reading in a 10-year-old girl.
What would you say to him?
To Mr. Farmer?
Yeah.
I don't know if, like, thank you encompasses it enough.
To a former first grade teacher in Chicago's Hyde Park neighborhood who held together an entire class after one of her students passed away.
Thank you so much for your infinite patience and your care, and for teaching me that there are so many layers in life. If you just kind of calm down and listen patiently like she did all of those years, you know, you can learn, experience, feel, you know, so much and meet so many different people. And I think I would just say thank you for everything to this day.
And finally, the retired law professor in Mississippi, Carolyn Ellis Staden. I'm told right now she's struggling with her health.
Her goal is to dance at her son's wedding. And I remember when she adopted that child in law school.
So if this podcast somehow finds its way to you, Professor, the small team here at Backseat Rider joins this passenger in sending you good vibes and getting through the next couple of months.
So she has everything she needs within her to make it to July.
Despite the variety of stories that we heard this week, all of my passengers agree on one thing, and that is that teachers don't get the credit they deserve.
We want them to, you know, mold and shape our children and teach them all of these things, and hell, sometimes even parent them if we're working couples. And they get paid pennies, and they're not treated the way that they should be.
So now that it's Teacher Appreciation Week, and with National Teacher Day coming up on Tuesday, May 9th, everybody asking for a favor here. Help me get this episode out there. Send it to any teachers you know. Send it to a former teacher. Post it on your social media. I think it'd be so awesome if it somehow found its way to one of the teachers that actually got talked about this week. How great would that be? Also, quick personal note, if my third grade teacher, Tom Campbell, up at Central Elementary in Wilmette, happens to be listening right now, thank you so much, Mr. Campbell, for setting me straight that year. I apologize once again for covering the wall in the boys' bathroom with all those wet paper towels. All right, before we get to the phones this week and a couple of listeners who called in with some hilarious stories you'll definitely want to hear, quick word again about a sponsor of Backseat Rider that is making this particular episode on teachers possible for me to bring you for free this week. Speaking of education, not sure about all of you, but one of the most frustrating things for me on this whole topic of climate change is not knowing who or what to believe, and also not feeling like I'm ever left with many practical steps on how I can be part of the solution. So there's a new book coming out that I want to give you a heads up on. You can pre-order it. It's by Michael Bloomberg and Carl Pope, and it's called Climate of Hope. And I haven't gotten my hands on a copy yet, but I am told that one of the things the book doesn't do is talk about climate change in these apocalypse-like terms. Climate of Hope creates a roadmap to tackle climate change, focusing on how cities, businesses, and regular citizens have the power to make an impact. Michael Bloomberg is the former mayor of New York City. Carl Pope is a lifelong environmental leader. And despite differing perspectives on this issue, these two have reached similar conclusions about climate action, again, offering practical solutions to create concrete benefits. Again, the book is called Climate of Hope, and you can pre-order it at climateofhope.com. All right, couple calls to get to before we go, and these were in response to the episode from a couple weeks ago called Cringeworthy, where I asked all my passengers to tell me about the time that they were most embarrassed by their parents.
Hi, my name's Sheila. I'm calling from Chicago. I just listened to today's episode about the most embarrassing moment from your parents. Mine wasn't my parents. It was my mother-in-law. For my baby shower, it was a large baby shower. It was my husband's family, my family, and all my coworkers. We just had one big shower. My mother-in-law gives me, as a gift that's wrapped up, a giant jumbo box of maxi pads. And she says to me after I open it, because you're going to need those after you have the baby. She did not buy a baby gift for the shower. This is what she gave me. I thought it was a joke, so I actually opened the box. Oh, no, it was full of maxi pads. My coworkers, for like a year, gave me such a hard time about that gift. It was so embarrassing. I just wanted to crawl into a hole. But anyway, yes, that's what she gave me. Anyway, love the podcast. Great today. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, Anthony. This is Julie from Chicago calling. I've got a pretty good, cringeworthy, embarrassing parent story that my friends have enjoyed when I've told them. So I thought I'd share with you. My mom, when I was 17, found a note that I had inadvertently left out in the kitchen of all places that I wrote to my then boyfriend that mentioned my having sex with him. Now, I had had sex a total of one time, and the note was post-breakup. We had just broken up, so I was very teenage angsty, angry with him, and I don't remember what it said. I think it was dramatic. I just know it talks about how I had sex with him. So my mom took me out to dinner for burgers, and while we were eating, she said, Did you mean to leave that note out so that I would find out you've had sex? And this is at a burger restaurant alone with my mom. I almost choked on my food. I wanted to die. It was awful. I was 17. I was a senior in high school. And it was dreadful.
Thank you very much for calling, ladies. And it is nice to hear from some locals on that topic. Although if you go back and listen to that episode, you will learn that getting humiliated by a parent is not just a national, but an international issue. So that is it for this week. If you want to share your own story about a teacher or your thoughts about this episode, please, please join us in the Backseat Rider community group. It's on Facebook. We just launched it a couple weeks ago, and there's all kinds of great conversations happening in the group. All you got to do is do a Facebook groups search for Backseat Rider. Search Facebook groups for Backseat Rider. You're going to find it there. One of the moderators will approve you within a few hours. It's a closed group, so you need approval, but the moderators will approve you and you'll be in there as long as you're on good behavior, right? And you could also call the Backseat Rider feedback line at 312-709-4667 if you got a story, or you can drop me an email or a voice note at the email backseatrider1@gmail.com. That's backseatrider, then just the number 1@gmail.com. All this info is in the show notes for you as well. Backseat Rider is edited by Bob Gilmartin, and it is produced by me with the help of Louis Kazmarek. And a special thanks to WTTW and WTTW.com for their support of this podcast. Look for new episodes of Backseat Rider every Wednesday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on iTunes.